Let's talk about some of these developments from today. So bringing up that speech again on Friday, Trump lays out the case for going to war with Iran. He's bringing up the Iranian hostage crisis in 79. He's bringing up the barracks bombing in Beirut in 83. He's bringing up the use of IEDs by Iranian-backed militias, the Quds Force, the IRGC in Iraq and elsewhere in the Middle East. And he lays out the case that we had to hit Iran because they are a danger to the world, they're a danger to America, they're working on a nuclear bomb, and they're unwilling to negotiate. That is what Trump told us was the justification for war on Friday. Now understand, this is a war of aggression, plain and simple. The United States was not under attack at all. Iran poses no threat to the United States. They are not building a nuclear bomb because they cannot, because we already bombed their nuclear facilities last year. So we're not in any danger. We're not acting in self-defense. One way to say it is that this is a preemptive attack. But preempting what exactly? Well, more on that in a moment. This is a war of choice. This administration chose to go to war. We weren't forced into it like we were at Pearl Harbor or on 9/11, arguably. At least in those contexts, there was a nominal reason. And both of these things are debated, whether Pearl Harbor was really a surprise, whether 9/11 was not an inside job, or if it was. This is a war of choice. Purely, and a war of aggression. The Trump administration thought that it could remove the Ayatollah from power, and so we made a decision to kill a foreign head of state because they are a rival, because they are a revisionist power. So we made a decision to go in there. Let's just put that out there for openers. Now, that is what Trump said on Friday. What we have since learned, however, is that this is really a lie. Trump said we're going to war because Iran is sponsoring all this terrorism and they're a historical antagonist and they're a threat to world safety. Again, none of this is true. As I said, war of choice, war of aggression. But Trump's own statement on Friday has today been undermined by his own Secretary of State and according to reports in the New York Times. And this is a story. This is from Alibaba. It says, quote, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has suggested that a planned Israeli attack on Iran determine the timing of Washington's assault on the government in Tehran. The top diplomat told reporters on Monday that Washington was aware Israel was going to attack Iran and that Tehran would retaliate against U.S. interests in the region. So U.S. forces struck preemptively. So this is the preemptive strike. Sort of an interesting logic, isn't it? Rubio said, quote, we knew there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties. The State Secretary's comments came minutes before the U.S. military confirmed that its death toll from the conflict had risen to 6 after 2 bodies were recovered from a regional facility struck by Iran. So think of the logic here. What was this preempting exactly? Well, Rubio said Israel was going to attack Iran. Israel was not in any danger. They were not going to be bombed. They didn't get bombed. Israel made the decision that they were going to war with Iran because this has been their plan for many years. And the plan began to be put in motion after October 7th. This is Israel's timeline, Israel's world. This is the Jews' world and we're living in it. This is Israel's world and we're living in it. This is their timeline, their tempo, their discretion. Rubio says that Israel informed us they were going ahead with the attack and we were given the option of participating or not. So Israel was launching its war of choice, its war of aggression. They were going to bomb Iran. Well, Israel was not going to be very successful because Israel doesn't actually have that big of an air force. And so if Israel went at it alone, maybe they would have gotten themselves in trouble and they couldn't handle it. And we would have to come in and save the day. And you know what else would have happened? If Israel went in by themselves, they would not have absolutely destroyed Iran's command, control, and communications, and they would not have destroyed Iran's missile launch platforms. So if Israel triggered the war and didn't finish it, all that would do is force Iran to retaliate, not just against Israel, but against us, because we are the sugar daddy for Israel. So Iran was then planning on hitting U.S. military facilities in the United Arab Emirates, in Qatar, in Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia, in Kuwait, in Iraqi Kurdistan, in Jordan. Even they hit targets in Oman as well, which is actually a neutral country. So think about the logic here. Israel was planning on attacking Iran. It would have been an unsuccessful attack. All it would have done is put Israel in harm's way, knowing they couldn't save themselves, and triggering Iran to retaliate, not just against them, but against us. In other words, Israel was going to trigger an attack that would kill a lot of Americans. So in order to preempt Iran's counterattack, we had to join Israel's war of choice. Think about the rhetoric here. Israel is unprovoked, aggressively attacking Iran for no reason, literally no reason. Israel is attacking Iran because they felt like it, because they chose to, because of their ambitions in the region. Israel wants Iran gone, and Israel gets what it wants. So Israel aggressively and with choice attacked Iran. Iran was going to counterattack against us too. So we had to preempt the counterattack, preempt the imminent threat from Iran retaliating against us for Israel bombing them. That's our preemptive war. Okay. Now, let's just state the obvious here. Israel was probably not going to attack Iran by themselves. Why was Israel intimating that they would? Why? Perhaps they would have followed through. Why would they have carried out a unilateral strike? Because this is exactly what they wanted. If they tell the United States, we're going it alone, guess all your troops are going to get killed in the crossfire. Oops. They know exactly what they're doing. Israel provoked this, triggered this. They know that if they attack Iran, Iran is going to rain missiles on American bases and a lot of Americans are going to die. And that would drag the United States into a war. Think about it. And by the way, that was reported in all the papers of record last week. In Politico, they said the logic inside the administration is that they maybe wanted Israel to attack Iran first, because then Iran would hit our bases, and that would create a better justification for the United States to enter the war. You could sell it to the public. But when you think about it, whether Israel attacked alone or with us, we would eventually be dragged into the conflict. If Israel attacked alone and Iran bombed all of our bases, we would be attacking Iran. The only difference is, if we go in at the beginning with Israel, then fewer of our soldiers would die. Because if we go in at the very beginning, we can hit Iran a lot harder than Israel can. We can kill more of the leadership. We can destroy more of the missile launch platforms. But you understand that Israel checkmated us. They reduced the number of outcomes and possibilities. They cut off all the off-ramps. They burned the boats. At a certain point, they made it so that there was no scenario where we don't go to war. If Israel attacked Iran, Iran would retaliate against us. We would have to intervene. And a lot of dead Americans would result from that scenario. So to prevent that, we had to go in with Israel at the beginning, and we find ourselves bombing Iran when we really don't need to, and we really shouldn't, and I think we really don't even want to. Israel, in a word, orchestrated this. And this is part of a pattern. Do you know that every confrontation with Iran has been orchestrated by Israel? We don't need to go through the whole timeline. Let's just go back to October 7th. In April 2024, under President Joe Biden, Israel launched an airstrike in Syria. They targeted a consulate building owned by Iran in Syria's capital, Damascus, and Israel killed 7 Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps commanders. Israel launched that airstrike. Israel killed Iranian personnel in a diplomatic building in Syria. And so Iran had to retaliate against Israel. Iran, in response, launched 50 ballistic missiles at Israel in a largely telegraphed symbolic response. But what happened before Iran retaliated? Joe Biden sent 2 aircraft carriers into the Middle East to deter Iran from retaliating too strongly. And those carriers, with their destroyers in tow, they intercepted those missiles. It was U.S., French, American, Jordanian, Saudi forces that shot down those missiles in April of 2024. And so what did Israel do 2 years ago? They provoked Iran by killing their personnel in a diplomatic building in Syria, triggering Iran to attack them. And an attack on Israel invites the United States into the theater to defend Israel. And then we find ourselves in the region. Then we find all these assets in the Middle East, and we find ourselves engaging Iran in a defensive context. Now you have U.S. and Gulf and European forces shooting down Iranian ballistic missiles. That was April of 2024. Joe Biden kept us out of that war. Joe Biden didn't bomb Iran. He deployed carriers to deter them and shot down their missiles and then left. What did Israel do 3 months later? Well, at the end of July 2024, Israel assassinated the political leader of Hamas in Tehran, Iran's capital. And not just on any day, but after Iran's president mysteriously died in a helicopter crash, Ebrahim Raisi, they were inaugurating their new president, Masoud Pezeshkian. It was on the inauguration day of their new president that Mossad went into Iran's capital, blew up the safe house for Hamas's political leader, Ismail Haniya. Another provocation, assassinating a foreign leader on Iranian soil on the inauguration day of their new president. And we did it all over again. Joe Biden deployed 2 aircraft carriers to the Middle East. And the Iranians put in place true promise again. And they retaliated this time against Israel with over 100 ballistic missiles. And once again, we shot them all down. This was in October of 2024. And Biden kept us out of the war. But once again, same thing. What do we see? We see that Israel provokes Iran. This is the pattern. Israel goes into Iran's capital, provokes them, triggering Iran to retaliate, and that invites us into the theater to defend them yet again. Then Trump gets elected, inaugurated January 2025. Netanyahu is the first foreign leader to visit the White House. February 4th, 2025. Netanyahu comes to the White House, and do you know what he's asking for? He's asking us to go to war with Iran. Like clockwork, okay? Iran hits Israel in October 24. In February 25, there's Netanyahu saying, hey, time to pay up. We got you elected. Now you need to bomb Iran. And you know what else? Our national security advisor, Mike Waltz, at that time, he was pushing on behalf of Netanyahu for Trump to go to war in Iran as well. And for several months, there was a heated debate inside the administration whether and when and how to attack Iran. And so February goes by, March goes by, April goes by. Netanyahu returns to the White House a second time, a week after Liberation Day with tariffs. And once again, Netanyahu pleads with Trump to bomb Iran. Trump says, we're going to give Iran 60 days. He announces this during the joint press conference with Netanyahu. They've got 60 days to negotiate, and if we can't reach a deal, then we will bomb Iran. 60 days passes. Netanyahu is sabotaging the diplomacy throughout. On the 61st day, one day outside of the deadline, June 13th, 2025, what does Israel do? They launch Operation Rising Lion, an all-out attack, preemptive attack on Iran, hitting Iran's nuclear facilities at Natanz, Fordo, Esfahan, but also hitting elsewhere. They actually started the attack with drone and missile attacks from inside the country. And they launched them against the Iranian military and the civilian leadership. They launched a massive cyber attack. And then Iran's Air Force came in and they bombed Iran. Once again, they launched the attack, a preemptive attack. They hit Iran. But oh no, what happened after Israel hit Iran and claimed victory? Well, Iran started hitting Israel back. And for nearly 2 weeks, Iran was raining missiles down on Israel, volleys of hundreds of ballistic missiles. And again, the intercept rate was about 86%. So many of those missiles were getting through in the desert where the nuclear plant is, at the Mossad sites, at other military sites. It also turns out that Israel by itself was not able to destroy Iran's nuclear infrastructure. And they knew they couldn't, because Iran's nuclear infrastructure is famously deep underground and fortified by mountains and actually thousands of feet of earth. So Israel hit all these facilities knowing they could not achieve their objectives. They hit Fordo, they hit Natanz, knowing that they would not actually finish the job and destroy those sites. It triggered an Iranian retaliation, and they knew it would. And they knew that in a protracted war of attrition, they would not be able to shoot down all these missiles. So famously, what did the United States have to do? Well, we had to show up and bail them out. We had to show up and shoot down the ballistic missiles, just as we had to in April 24, just as we did in October 24. Same pattern. Israel provokes Iran, triggers a retaliation. We got to shoot down the missiles in all three of those cases, except this time we also had to go in and finish the job. Israel hit those nuclear sites. Nuclear weapons are called strategic weapons. You can't attack another country's strategic weapons. That's an all-out act of war. And if Israel hits Iran's nuclear sites and they are not destroyed, what's the first thing that Iran is going to do? Well, they're going to race towards a nuclear bomb, because either the sites will eventually be destroyed or they will produce a nuclear bomb to deter that from happening. So, in other words, Israel started a war it knew it couldn't win or finish, least of all achieve its objectives. They started a war that they knew would trigger an Iranian retaliation that is not survivable. And they also knew that not only could they not achieve their objectives, but actually it would accelerate the Iranian nuclear program. By not finishing off those sites, it might actually accelerate the timeline for Iran to acquire a bomb. So that required the United States not only to defend Israel, but also to finish off the nuclear sites offensively, which is what we then did. And on the final day of the war, we went in with B-2 stealth bombers, and we dropped the bunker buster bombs, 35,000-pound bombs, on Natanz, on Fordo, and we launched Minuteman missiles at those sites and Esfahan as well. And then we called an end to the war. Now, as I said, after that conflict, do you really believe that that war only lasted 12 days? Of course not. The war with Iran has been going on for 15 years, maybe longer, depending on where you want to draw the lines. The war with Iran has been going on for decades. And many people said that was the beginning and the end, that the war with Iran started when Israel bombed them and it ended when we bombed them. Well, it didn't start then, and it surely didn't end then either. That was only the climax at that point in time of an already ongoing conflict, of an already established pattern. As a matter of fact, the war between Israel and Iran had been crescendoing. It had always been escalating. Again, going back even further, going back to the assassination of Qasem Soleimani in 2020, going back to Israel's cyber attacks and industrial sabotage and assassinations in 2021 and 2022, October 7th, and the provocations against Iran in 2024, and then the bombing in 25. That was only the latest and greatest operation. And so if you were to solve for X, if you're to finish the equation, well, what's going to happen after Midnight Hammer? Is that just the end of the war? Iran is going to give up their ambitions for a deterrent capability? Is Israel going to give up their quest for regime change? Or are we going to get the same pattern, which is that Israel will provoke Iran, they will trigger a conflict, it will force the United States to intervene. And that pattern will keep playing out until the Iranian regime is defeated. Well, that's how I predicted that we would be back here, because that has been the pattern up until now. And that is apparently exactly what happened. Israel came to the United States in December 2025. This was Netanyahu's fifth visit to the White House, okay, to the United States. He came in February 25, April 25, July 25, September 25, and then Netanyahu returned just before New Year's in 2025. He came to Mar-a-Lago. And what he asked for from Trump was another war with Iran, echoing that meeting in February of last year. Netanyahu came to Mar-a-Lago and said, well, we've taken out their nuclear program. Now we need to take out their missiles, because they're building 300 missiles every month, and they're all pointed at us. And Trump didn't make a firm commitment. Trump said, well, if they build their nuclear, we'll surely attack them. If they rebuild their missiles, we'll consider it. That wasn't good enough. So what happened? Well, Netanyahu came back. And Netanyahu came back to the White House again in February, this month, February 2026. Then Netanyahu informed the president that Israel would go to war. Israel was going to launch a war before the Jewish holiday of Purim to celebrate the Jews' victory over the Amalekites, over their enemies, and that it was really just a question of whether we're in or we're out. And again, this was going to be whether they did it alone or we did it the way we did it, it would have been the same outcome. Israel basically told the U.S., we're going to rerun the playbook from last year. We're going to bomb Iran. Well, again, if they bombed Iran without us on Friday, Iran would have launched its missiles at our bases in Erbil, in Iraq, at Al Udeid, in Qatar, in the Emirates, in Saudi Arabia, in Jordan, all over the region. And if Israel hit Iran and then Iran counterattacked us, we probably would not be able to intercept all the missiles. And so many Americans would die. So again, they did something that triggered us to go in. And now we're in. And it begs the question, why is it that Israel is able to do this? They have orchestrated all of this. They have orchestrated every aspect of this from the beginning. They orchestrated the elimination of the Iranian nuclear deal in 2018. They orchestrated the Al-Aqsa flood on 2023. They orchestrated the attack in 2025, and they orchestrated this. Again, they control the timeline. They control the tempo. They control the ladder of escalation. And what role does the United States play in this? What we are told about the relationship between the U.S. and Israel is that they are our ally and that we are their patron and they are our client. We furnish them with $3.8 billion per year in military aid. Last year, the Congress authorized $26 billion. Forgive me, that was in 2024 in the spring. $24, $25 billion in additional U.S. military aid for Israel. We furnish them with F-35s. We tolerate their nuclear program. We protect them in the international community from condemnation in the Security Council, from sanctions from European countries. And yet they seem to be able to act alone. Think about how warped this dynamic is. Netanyahu comes here and tells us how it's going to be. He comes here over and over. Well, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. We, who's we? You're our bitch. You take money from us. Like, we should own you. You wouldn't exist without us. You would have never existed in the first place. You could have never declared independence. There would have been no Zionist movement without American Jewry, without America's weapons. You'd have no nuclear arsenal. You wouldn't have won your war against the Arabs. You would have never won any of your wars for that matter. Your adversaries would still be standing. And they come to the White House and tell our president, hey, this is the way it's going to be. We're going in with you or without you. With you or without you. Who's the boss here? Who's in control of this relationship? Who is the superpower? Trump or Netanyahu? And of course, we all know that Israel is the boss. Israel controls our country. Now you know it for a fact. Because what is a bigger decision? Do you know the actual definition of sovereignty? So what it means to be sovereign is to have the authority to control what happens in your borders. That's what sovereignty is. The king is the sovereign of the United Kingdom because he, at the end of the day, gets to control what happens inside the country. Sovereignty comes from the Peace of Westphalia, when the German princes are able to decide whether they're going to be Protestant or Catholic. Hey, you're the prince, it's your decision for your realm. That's the idea. Now, in political science, we say that the essence of sovereignty, according to Carl Schmitt, is the ability for the government to tell its citizens to kill and be killed. That is actually what sovereignty means. Theoretically, definitionally, sovereignty means you control what happens in your borders. But what it means to be sovereign is you can command your subjects or your citizens to kill and be killed, to go to war. That's what politics is. We are going to raise an army. We are going to get a bunch of guns and you're going to go and fight those people and you're going to have to kill them and you might have to be killed for the sake of us, for the sake of our political entity. That's what sovereignty is. So if Netanyahu can come to the White House and say, you're going to die for us, these are the terms under which you're going to kill and be killed. We're attacking Iran, and if we do, your soldiers are going to die. So if you don't want them to die, then you're going to have to kill Iranians, and some combat troops will be killed too to prevent that from happening. Again, if they have the authority to tell us what to do for those matters, then that means they're our boss. What are the real decisions that a government makes other than when to go to war and when to make peace? Other than the government's ability to tell its volunteer army, you're going to die. Like Trump said on Friday, soldiers are going to die. Okay, but who are they dying for? Who's telling them to die? For what? Whose decision is that? Is it the president elected by the people of the United States of America? Is it the chief executive of our constitutional representative democratic government? Or is it the prime minister of Israel? And what gives him the ability or the right or the authority to do that? Well, obviously, Netanyahu's authority proceeds from the fact that our country is run by organized Jewry. Jews have all the power in America. They are the gatekeepers. They are the middlemen. They have so much financial leverage, so much political leverage that they cannot be opposed. Look at the media entity that was just created. Skydance, Paramount, Warner Brothers, TikTok. Larry Ellison, friend of Netanyahu, controls all of that. Let's say you want to be an actor in the entertainment industry. You offend the Jews. Well, Larry Ellison owns the largest media conglomerate in America. So if he blacklists you and says, hey, we're not going to work with that guy and we're going to cut contracts with anybody that does, you can't work. They control it. And the same is true of finance. Who runs BlackRock? Larry Fink, a Jewish Zionist. Bill Ackman, who runs his own financial fund, he goes to Larry Fink after the protest from October 7th and says, we need to blacklist every student who protested against Israel in finance, And Larry Fink, running BlackRock, says, okay, BlackRock is the largest asset manager in the world. Trillions of dollars in assets under management. If Larry Fink says you can't work in finance, you can't work in finance. They don't need to run all of it. They don't need to run every financial firm, every media firm. They need to own enough of it and be willing to use it. Same thing with the ADL. Does anybody want the ADL breathing down their neck, canceling their Adidas contract, their Gap contract, getting their money frozen? Of course not. It's all like this. And so people have said, well, the reason President Trump couldn't refuse is because he knows they would kill him. That's what Tucker Carlson said today. He said, you can't say no to Israel because the last president that did is JFK. And he's referring to the fact that in 1963, John F. Kennedy, the U.S. president, was in a dispute with Ben-Gurion, the president of Israel, the prime minister of Israel. And at that time, Israel was producing a nuclear weapon, very similar to Iran. And JFK, his policy was non-proliferation, inherited from Eisenhower. Eisenhower, in fact, told JFK about this during the presidential transition in 1961. He said, you gotta watch the Israelis. And so JFK wanted inspectors. He wanted the IAEA and the United States to inspect Israel's nuclear facilities to determine that they were not making a nuclear weapon. And JFK's demands kept growing stronger until eventually JFK told Ben-Gurion, look, if you don't do what we say, you're cut off. JFK sent him a letter in June of 1963 and said, if you don't give us inspections twice a year and we get to see all of your facilities, then we're cutting you off from foreign aid completely and we'll back the Arabs. Ben-Gurion resigned the day after he got that letter. And 5 months later, on November 22nd, 1963, JFK was assassinated. Lyndon B. Johnson is elected, and under his presidency, Israel went nuclear. About a year later, Israel got a nuclear bomb, successfully tested a nuclear device. And not only that, but U.S. foreign aid to Israel, not only did it increase threefold, but the composition of it changed also. Whereas foreign aid to Israel from 1948 to 1964 was mostly economic and humanitarian aid, after Lyndon Johnson became president, it's almost all military aid, almost all of it. And they start getting the most advanced U.S. equipment, tanks, guns, you name it. So the implication is a U.S. president can't say no to Israel because they control our system and they have penetrated our country so thoroughly they will literally kill you. In the same way that we were able to kidnap Maduro and we were able to assassinate the Ayatollah, Israel could simply take out the top of the United States. And you know what? Here's the problem with that line of thinking. The whole point of electing Trump is that he was going to be brave enough to say no. Isn't that the fight? Isn't that what it is to be America first? Is to stare death in the face and say no, America first? America first or death? Is that not what George Washington did when he crossed the Delaware? Was say America first or death? We would rather live free as Americans than, or we'd rather die freely as Americans than lived as subjects, as colonies in the British Empire. That's what it is to be American. Is that not what Davy Crockett did at the Alamo? Is that not what the Texans did when they made their stand? That's who we are. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what it is to be an American. It is to be independent. It is to be free. It is to die on our feet, not live on our knees. That is why we elected Trump, to be a leader that would look at all the foreign special interests, to look at Israel in their face, at their hook nose, to look at India, to look at the multinational corporations, to look at the transhumanists in big tech, and to tell them, no, I'm the boss. I'm America. We're putting America first. That's why you're the president. So I'm sorry. That's not an excuse. When they say, well, they'll kill Trump, they'll kill his family. Vance knows they'll kill him, they'll kill his family. Well, that's what you signed up for. Let him do it. Let him do it. Go to the American people and say, this is happening. And if I die, you know who's responsible. This is a country of 350 million people. All it would take is one act of bravery from a real leader, from a martyr, and people would lose their fear and probably rise up. Could Israel fight 90 million Iranians and 300 million Americans and 500 million Europeans? I don't think so. But that is where Trump has failed us. Trump is not able to tell them no. And this is why we are now at war. This is now why real courageous Americans are giving their lives. Think about that. Well, Trump can't say no because, you know, the Israelis might kill him. So send all those disposable people to die for Israel. Send all those disposable little people, all those soldiers, they can go and die in Iran. How ridiculous. You're a U.S. soldier stationed in Kuwait. You've been hit by a ballistic missile from Iran. You are dead. The real best and greatest and the most valorant among us, they are dying in a war of choice, a war of aggression for Israel because Trump is afraid or stupid, because Vance is afraid or calculating. So those Americans will die. Just as thousands of Americans died in Syria and Iraq and Yemen and everywhere else. Those are the ones who will die. This is where Trump has failed us. That's your job. America first implies the existence of America last. Well, who's being put before America? Now you know. Now you know. America wanted a peace agreement. America wanted to make a deal with Iran. And we had one, and we did. But Israel wanted war. Israel wanted a war at any cost because they want to destroy Iran. Why? Not because Iran poses some existential threat. How could they? Israel has 300 nuclear warheads. How could Iran possibly pose an existential threat? Israel has Jericho missiles. They have nuclear submarines. If Iran launched any kind of attack on Israel, they talk about Iran as this apocalyptic nation. Israel could nuke them. Iran did not have nuclear weapons. They weren't building them. And if they were, they were all destroyed in Midnight Hammer. So Iran was not an existential threat to Israel. Why then did Israel want regime change? It's the same reason they want regime change everywhere else. In Iraq, Syria, Libya, Egypt, Turkey, next. They want regime change, and they've spelled it out in their documents for one simple reason. They want to dominate the Middle East. They laid it out in Oded Yunon's 1980s Grand Strategy for Israel. They said, we want to topple all of the powerful Arab and Islamist dictators. This actually precedes the Iranian Revolution, actually. They said, we want to topple all the dictators. We want to dismember all the states, fracture them along ethnic and sectarian lines. We're going to take Syria and divide it up three ways: Alawites, Druze, Sunnis. Take Iraq, divide it up three ways: Kurds, Sunnis, Shiites. Take Egypt, divide it up a few ways: Coptic Christians, Arabs, Bedouins. Take Lebanon, divide it up five ways. This is what they laid out 50 years ago. They said the era of land for peace is over. We're not giving up more land for peace with our neighbors. We're aggressively going to confront them. We're going to exploit their weaknesses, which is their diversity. We're going to obviously infiltrate the United States and use them as the instrument to do it. And we will create, as they said, a mosaic of tribes with flags. We will basically disintegrate all the states into fiefdoms that can never challenge Israel. Tiny statelets that can never create a powerful military that will always be dependent for energy or for access to the sea or other things. They'll never unify. They'll never oppose. And they laid it out again in the Clean Break Report in 96. It's all the same people in the Bush White House. They said the same thing. In the Clean Break Report, they said, we've got a problem on our northern border. Hezbollah and all of these exiled Palestinians from the old days are gathered there. They're being supplied by Iran through Syria. Syria, like Iraq, is a Ba'athist state. Iraq has all these missiles pointed at us. So Israel said we need to take out Iraq, then Syria, then Iran, and then we can secure our northern border. And then you can push up and down and east. That's the whole idea. It's so that Israel can take more territory. They can become energy independent. They can take the Sinai, control that choke point at the Suez. They can move north and they can control up to the Litani River to protect themselves there. They're going to move up into Damascus in the suburbs and maybe cross the Jordan River, or at least take the West Bank right up to the Jordan River. And then they can dominate the entire region. As we've been talking about with nuclear weapons, their qualitative military edge, that has been the plan from the beginning. And that's what this war is about. That's why they decided to go. And now we're fighting for them. We're fighting for them to achieve these ambitions. Americans are dying for a greater Israel. Americans are dying so that Israel can be a superpower, so that their empire can be born. You are dying for it. You're paying for it. You're voting for it. And by the way, when all this started under George W. Bush, you know who wrote the speeches for George W. Bush? David Frum. David Frum, he's the Jewish speechwriter, the neocon that invented the term axis of evil. When George W. Bush said that there's an axis of evil, it's Iraq, Iran, and North Korea, do you know who wrote that phrase? David Frum. Do you know who J.D. Vance's first mentor was in the mid-2010s? David Frum. J.D. Vance wrote for David Frum's website. David Frum wrote a tell-all for The Atlantic years ago saying that he would tell J.D. Vance, one day you're going to become president. David Frum said this to Vance as he groomed him. You're going to be president. You're going to be a common sense Republican. You're going to deliver the young people to the GOP by being a moderate. Go figure. After Trump won the election in 2016, J.D. Vance convened a meeting in January 2017, and David Frum was in attendance. And they started to prepare a J.D. Vance for president campaign for the late 2020s. This was in 2017. Google it. It's in The Atlantic. David Frum, tell all about J.D. Vance. Well, what is J.D. Vance's position on this war of choice? His old mentor, David Frum, cheering on from the sidelines, who wrote Axis of Evil 25 years ago, arguably creating that justification for a war way ahead of schedule. Well, according to the New York Times, J.D. Vance was all in favor of this war. The New York Times did a big piece, you should read it, about how the decision was made to go to war. And it says that when the administration was faced with this decision, do we join Israel or not? Nobody opposed U.S. entrance into the war. Nobody. And as a matter of fact, J.D. Vance was pushing for a harder response to Iran. This is from the New York Times. It says, quote, Vice President J.D. Vance, a longtime skeptic of American military interventions in the Middle East, argued in a White House Situation Room meeting that if the United States was going to hit Iran, it should go big and go fast. J.D. Vance said we should go to war. This is not the first time this has been reported. It's been reported for the past 2 weeks that Vance was in favor of U.S. intervention against Iran. This is only the latest. Vance was encouraging Trump to go to war. The only person that was discouraging it was Tucker Carlson, to his credit. And I have my beef with him. But to his credit, as far as we know, Tucker Carlson is the only one who went to the White House on February 23rd and tried to discourage President Trump from taking us to war. And for that, whatever Tucker is, CIA, foreign operative, whatever, we owe him gratitude because he tried. And for whatever reason, who knows what he really is, we should be somewhat grateful. We have to give him the credit he deserves for that. He was the only one. But more to the point, J.D. Vance was pushing us to go to war. Now, a lot of people say, yeah, well, that is a planted story by the New York Times. I saw Marjorie Taylor Greene on Twitter. She said, oh, they must really not like Vance. Who's they? She goes, oh, the media must not like Vance. That's why they're trying to pin the war on him. So a lot of people are treating this like it's a fluke. Oh, that's not real. Vance didn't want the war. Well, you want to know how we know it's true? J.D. Vance said the exact same thing in July of 2024. You want to know when he said it and where he said it? Well, a week after Donald Trump was shot in the ear and Tucker Carlson, Elon Musk, and Peter Thiel called Donald Trump and encouraged him to select J.D. Vance as his nominee, the RNC was held. And it was at the RNC where Trump announced that J.D. Vance would be his running mate, that J.D. Vance conducted his first interview as the VP nominee with Sean Hannity. His first interview at the Republican National Convention, the nominating convention in July of 2024, in his first interview, J.D. Vance sat with Sean Hannity and he said, "We have to hit Iran hard. We have to punch them hard. You can't do these small strikes like Biden is doing. You have to punch them in the face. You have to hit them hard." He actually volunteered that. Sean Hannity didn't ask him about Iran. He asked him about foreign policy in general. And Vance said, "Well, for example, if you go against Iran, you got to punch them hard." So this has been his position. We know he was saying that in the White House because this was his policy when he became the VP nominee. And there's another instance. Several months before that, he went to the Quincy Institute. I'm sure you've heard me speak on this. An anti-war nonprofit. They push the foreign policy, which is called Restraint. Name of a book by Barry Posen. And they push foreign policy restraint using American power, but in a restrained way. J.D. Vance went to this conference, and according to the Jewish Post, he put a pro-Israel spin on America First, according to Jewish Insider. And during the speech, J.D. Vance said, "We have to arm Israel so they can bomb Iran." He said, "We treasure Israel as an ally. We work on them with missile defense, and they are the Holy Land, and we should give them what they need to bomb Iran." He went to an anti-war think tank and told them we need to bomb Iran for Israel. Okay? That's who J.D. Vance is. That was in the spring of 24. He gave that interview in July at the RNC in 24. And this week, he encouraged Trump to go max on Iran, to go all the way. Now, consider. People are saying that Vance is normally anti-war. Where exactly does J.D. Vance come from? Well, like I said, he was groomed and he was the protege of David Frum, who is a Jewish neocon, former speechwriter for George W. Bush. And if you read that article, it is very suspicious because somehow David Frum knew in the 2010s that J.D. Vance would be the president in the late 2020s. And how did David Frum know that? How did he get this feeling when J.D. Vance was just some former law student? Well, he said he got that feeling because of Vance's biographical credibility, because of his book. His book, Hillbilly Elegy, which talks about how he's from the disaffected white working class. And effectively, David Frum said he believes Vance will become the Republican president because Vance is going to be able to trick all the stupid white people. Vance has this story. He's got the biographical credibility. He can go to the enraged middle American radicals, the white working class, and he can say, "Hey, everybody, I'm just like you. I came from the Rust Belt. I came from Ohio. My meemaw's a drug addict," or whatever. "My mom's a drug addict. My meemaw helped me out." And he's going to get all the white people back on the plantation if the Republicans lost them. That's how David Frum knew. It gets better. In 2016, when Donald Trump launched the anti-war America First movement, Trump said, as we talked about earlier in the show, that the war in Iraq was a mistake, that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that George Bush knew there weren't weapons of mass destruction. He let 9/11 happen on his watch. Trump was saying all these things. Trump repudiated David Frum's legacy, the Republican Party legacy, repudiated the Bush dynasty, destroyed Jeb Bush, single-handedly made support for Iraq actually a non-starter in the Republican primary. And it wasn't before that. It wasn't. Most of those candidates were pro-Iraq war right up until Donald Trump said we weren't going to be that way anymore. Where was J.D. Vance when that movement was born? when the MAGA America First movement was born, when Trump came down the escalator and said, we should have never been in Iraq. We don't even have it. We don't have the oil. You can't even go there. They knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. When he came down and said all that, and he created this movement and inspired everybody, where was Vance? Well, Vance was a never Trumper. Do you know who J.D. Vance did vote for in 2016? Take a guess. He didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. He didn't vote for Donald Trump. He voted for Evan McMullen. Who's Evan McMullen? Nobody knows. Evan McMullen is a former CIA officer. He was handpicked by Bill Kristol from the Weekly Standard to run as a spoiler candidate against Trump. So all the neocons like Ben Shapiro and Bill Kristol and others, Rupert Murdoch, they did not want Trump to win. So how are they going to prevent him from winning? Well, they were going to get a spoiler candidate to run as an independent in a state like Utah. That's where Evan McMullen is from. And they thought that if they could take enough votes away from Trump in a state like Utah, Hillary would win that state and she would get a few of those electoral votes and she might win it in a pinch. That was the playbook by the neocons. That was the playbook by the pro-war crowd, by Shapiro, by Bill Kristol. Bill Kristol was the architect of this. First, he had David French run from National Review, and he chickened out because he's a wimp. And then they put in place the CIA officer, Evan McMullen. And that's who J.D. Vance voted for. Bill Kristol, for those that don't know, is one of the architects of the Iraq War. Writing for the Weekly Standard, which is one of the big intellectual magazines of the 90s and 2000s, Bill Kristol was pushing the strongest for the war in Iraq. He's part of that same generation as David Frum. And his father, Irving Kristol, is the godfather of neoconservatism. That's who J.D. Vance voted for. That guy's handpicked candidate. Okay, now people are surprised that J.D. Vance pushed for a war in Iran. Really? The guy that was mentored by David Frum, the guy that voted for Bill Kristol's spoiler, Evan McMullen, the guy that told us at an anti-war think tank that we need to go to war with Iran, in his first interview as the VP nominee said, we got to bomb Iran really hard. Now people deny, they're surprised that J.D. Vance was in favor of a war with Iran now? Why? You shouldn't be surprised. That's who J.D. Vance is. J.D. Vance is not a real anything. He is whatever they need him to be. He is what Elon Musk needs him to be. He is what Rupert Murdoch needs him to be. He is what Miriam Adelson needs him to be. Is anybody surprised that a never-Trumper that was calling Trump a Nazi, that was grateful for Obama, is anybody surprised that this guy is now in favor of a war with Iran? Wait a second, you're telling me he never had an ideological epiphany? I thought that when he was ready to run for Senate and he needed Trump's endorsement, that coincidentally, he got based and red-pilled. You know, he was a never-Trumper. He did vote for Evan McMullen. He did call Trump a racist Nazi. He did say Trump was an idiot. He said that white people only hate Obama because they're jealous that a black man is smarter than them. But, you know, magically in 2022, he just had this epiphany. He got based and red-pilled. Oh, yeah, and also he needed Trump to endorse him to win that Senate seat in Ohio. But, you know, I'm sure that's just a coincidence. I'm sure that timing was just really serendipitous for him. He got lucky that he became Trump's number one cheerleader right when he needed his endorsement to win that three-way primary and then get a Senate seat, which would then propel him into the vice presidency and now the presumptive nominee for president in 28. Yeah, that wasn't orchestrated and manufactured for 15 years by the CIA and the Israel lobby. No, that's the story of how a white guy that's just like us realized, you know, learned to stop. What's the movie? Stop being afraid of Trump and learn to love America first. Yeah, no, it's just a great big coincidence, isn't it? I'm shocked and surprised that he's actually not a diehard America firster and that he wasn't telling the president to restrain Israel. And you know what this says, by the way? As I said on Friday, we are sentenced to this forever if you don't make a change. And by that, I mean, you can't vote for these people in 28. Sorry, this is disqualifying. You do understand that Vance's career has to be finished after this, right? Because if it isn't, then we are all slaves, okay? Then we are all slaves to Israel. If you vote for J.D. Vance or and Marco Rubio after they killed Americans for Israel, they didn't oppose this. They could have. They could have said, Mr. President, let's not bomb Iran. Let's restrain Israel instead. They didn't do that. They have power. They got, Vance got votes. Rubio's the Secretary of State. Where are they on this one? Where are they? Well, they're actually pushing for the war. You can't vote for these people because these are the times for choosing that determine the character of a leader, okay? And we've seen Trump fail, and now we've seen these people fail. Now we have the information we need. It was a time for choosing when COVID appeared, and we had a decision whether to lock down the country. Trump could have chosen not to lock down the country. Other countries chose not to. Trump didn't. That was a time for choosing. That's the moment when the world is falling apart, and you need a leader that's going to say, look, we're not shutting down. He did. BLM was another one. The rioters took over the cities. They looted, they vandalized, they torched. Trump didn't lift a finger to stop it. Sean Hannity told them it would play better in the election if people saw Democrats and black people wrecking all the cities. So Trump stood down. That's another time for choosing. So is this. If you're in favor of this debacle, this catastrophe, yeah, I'm not voting for you. And think about, if you are a voter, what would be disqualifying for you? Someone takes us to war in Iran. That's not disqualifying. So what would they actually have to do to lose your vote? Exactly. I understand if Midnight Hammer wasn't disqualifying. I get that one, actually. Sort of. If you didn't really see where that was going to go, if you didn't really understand the trajectory, maybe. Killing Qasem Soleimani, maybe. We're in a regime change war with Iran. This is like number one on Israel's wish list. Has been for 20 years. Everyone knows that. The last thing that we need. If Trump, Vance, and Rubio take us to war and you vote for them again in 26 and 28, is there any limit to what you will tolerate? Is there any limit? And what is it? We had 230,000 deportations. We don't have a border wall. They just left Minneapolis. They won't even ban the food dye. They won't even ban the Red 40. Okay? This is what they will not do. What they will do, so funny. Oh, well, we can't deport people from Minneapolis. That's killing our approval ratings. Oh, ground troops in Iran? I don't give a shit about approval ratings. We'll do whatever's necessary for Israel. And I still see people on the Trump side making excuses. They say, well, it's a four-dimensional play. This is about China. I assure you, this has nothing to do with China. You want to know why? We're pulling THAAD systems from South Korea to put them in the Middle East. We pulled an aircraft carrier from the Sea of Japan to put it in the Persian Gulf. That's why you know it has nothing to do with China. Give me a break. This has everything to do with Israel. I see people saying, well, I voted for Trump, so I trust him. Trump said no new wars, peace president, golden age. How did this whole thing start? He said, we oppose the war in Iraq. You know that war for Israel sold to us under the false pretense they had nuclear weapons when they didn't? Yeah, so he lost his mandate when he betrayed his promise. Now you don't need to support him anymore. What at this point is the excuse? And people are getting ready to vote for Vance and making excuses for him already. This has to be the breaking point. This is the breaking point for the GOP coalition. You buried the Epstein files. There is no border wall. You didn't deliver on mass deportations. You cut corporate tax rates for the rich by cutting Medicaid again. No infrastructure bill, no middle class tax cuts. You got to refund the tariffs. And now we're in a regime change war with Iran. That's the breaking point. I'm out. I'm done. I am off the Trump train. I am not voting in 26. if Rubio or Vance are on the ticket in any form in 28, I'm voting for a Democrat. Say whatever you want. Do your worst. Hey, carpe donctum and cat turd and all you fucking idiots. Carpe donctum is a friend of mine, actually. But all of these plan trusters, Trump supporters, worshipers, Republicans, say whatever you want. You are a fucking cuck. You are a bitch. You are voting for a party that is raping you. You are voting for a candidate that is screwing you. They break every promise. They lie to your face. They betray you. And our lives aren't getting any better. How does a regime change war with Iran make us safer? How does that make our lives better? You can't deport the Somalis from Minneapolis, but you can go to war with a million-man army in Iran? Give me a break. Say whatever you want. People say, but the Democrats do all these other things. I don't give a shit. Maybe if a Democrat were in office, we wouldn't go to war with Iran. Joe Biden kept us out of a war with Iran. We didn't have a war with Iran under Joe Biden. And some people say, well, you would have gotten it anyway. Okay, so then voting doesn't matter. Is that what you're telling me? People tell me, well, it doesn't matter whether we vote for the Democrat or the Republican, we get the same thing. Okay, so then what does it even matter? If we're going to get a war with Iran all the same, if we're going to get H-1Bs and foreign students all the same, then why is this the most important election of our lifetimes? Because you can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. You can't at once tell us we got to be good little plan trusters. Don't be a panickin'. Everybody's got to vote. Stay in line. The golden age is imminent. And then tell us, well, it really doesn't matter. Trump can't stop a war in Iran. He can't stop mass migration. He can't stop anything. The best we can hope for is, we'll be a little bit better than the most progressive Democrat in history. They say, well, he's better than Kamala Harris. You mean the most progressive Democrat in history? He's better than the mixed race woman with a Jewish husband and that freak show family who wants to abolish the police and let in 10 million illegals and is in favor of, oh, he's marginally better than her. Oh, great. That's what the MAGA movement was all about, right? Trump came down the escalator and said, we're going to be marginally better than the worst Democrats ever, right? That was the battle cry. Yeah, that must be a false memory. When Trump said, it's time to deliver a real victory for the American people, I will fight for you, I'll win for you, for every child that dreams, every parent that dreams for their child. That's in my imagination. He came down the escalator and said, well, we're not going to import 10 million illegals. We're going to have net negative migration, kind of. So I'm out. This is the plan. The GOP must burn in 2026. Shut it down. Yeah. It's called playing both sides. Not just for the Jews, folks. Playing both sides, it ain't just for the Jews anymore. Now it's the Goyim's turn, okay? Now it's our turn to play both sides. People say, but the Democrats. Me, my options are open. I'm a free agent. I'm independent. The GOP doesn't own me. Trump doesn't own me. If they don't do what I want them to do, if they betray me, I'm going with the other side. I'm walking away from the table. It ain't just for Jews anymore. We can play both sides too. You want to see that? Let's have white men play both sides. I'm going to hold my nose and vote for a Democrat. How about them apples? I'm done holding my nose voting for Republicans. I just get shit on. They say, but the Democrats do all these other things. I know. I guess it doesn't really matter. I'm going to hold my nose and vote for them anyway. At least we won't go to war with Iran. Marginally better, right? Fuck them. Fuck these people. Fuck Trump, Vance, Rubio. War with Iran? Are you kidding me? What is MAGA even about then? What is even the claim of America first? We're in a war with Iran. Wake up. 10 years, people would have said, that's the neocons. Now they're supporting it. You have been brainwashed. You are not immune from propaganda. I'm the same now as someone posted a clip from my show in 2017. I said, we got to keep our foot on the gas. We can't go into a war with Iran. I didn't leave MAGA. MAGA left me. All these people calling me a panican. You betrayed the president. No, they betrayed me. I got on board for the other Trump. I got on board when Trump said Rubio was a puppet of Rubio's a puppet of Sheldon Adelson. That's when I got on board. I got on board when Trump was against regime change in Syria, much less Iran. What happened to you? What happened to all these other people? It became about something else. So I'm done. That's J.D. Vance. That's the administration. We're out of time here. So we're going to move on into the super chats. We're going to talk a little bit more tomorrow about the actual war fighting. I apologize, but we're like 90 minutes into almost 2 hours into the show, and we haven't even gotten there. So I'll save the rest for tomorrow. Tomorrow on the show, 9:30 Central, starting the show earlier this week because people want to watch, because everyone's excited now, and I'm, you know, delivering the best analysis, obviously, recognized. Tomorrow, 9:30 Central, we're going to be talking about the actual state of the conflict. Trump has no plan here. Okay, they're calling it regime change. Now they're saying it isn't regime change. They're saying boots on the ground. Do they mean it? Iran is hitting all the Gulf countries with missiles, hitting their airports, hitting their hotels, in a bid to get the Gulf countries to pressure Washington to stop. Will this become a war of attrition? We'll do the math. We'll talk about all that tomorrow, okay? That'll be tomorrow at 9:30 Central. We'll call it part two of tonight, okay?